Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Remember leaving the house and going to stuff? Well, it's back, because Great Big Owl is bringing some of our favourite shows to the London Podcast Festival, starting September the 2nd, and we'd love to see you there. So if you're a fan of
Two Mr. P's in a Podcast,
Brian and Roger,
My Mate Bought a Toaster,
Friends with Friends,
The One Show Show,
Richard and Greta,
From Queer to Eternity,
Wrestle Me,
or just daytime drinking,
then go to the King's Place website and grab some tickets now. And by some tickets, we ideally mean 8 tickets, that's one for each show. Actually, bring a friend and make that 16 tickets. Great Big Owl, the only podcast network with the audacity to ask you to buy 16 tickets in one go. But we'll be thrilled if you just buy one.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Game of Thrones. The Walking Dead. Westworld. No, that's the West Wing. Westworld. There we go. There have been many podcasts which seek to analyse the complexities, the depth, the plot lines, the hidden story arcs, the beauty of these productions. Quite simply, the world doesn't need another one, which is why we're applying that level of discussion to the bottom of the televisual barrel and scraping it with a weekly celebration of The One Show. And we are back. Yes, after a break, we, like the Taliban, have returned. Although, instead of violating rights, oppressing women and deliberately targeting civilians, monuments and public buildings in violation of international humanitarian law, we bring you the podcast that takes a deep dive into TV's shallowest programme. Yes, it's the One Show Show, and though its televisual crimes perhaps in many ways rival those of the Taliban, we're here to see if it, like the Taliban say they have, it's changed since we last accepted those oh-so-green sofas as our leaders. Now, we last met here in One Show Analysis podcast land during lockdown one. And what a giddy time we've all had since then. But both Mark and myself have been double-jabbed against ill-conceived filler films about seabirds. We're protected against trite celebrity guests plugging some old shit. And we're letting Giles Brandreth pass through us as to achieve some kind of herd immunity. So together, let's find out exactly what the One Show has been up to since we last graced the pod waves. With impeccable timing, we've cleverly chosen to return just as the One Show itself is on a summer break. Great. But that's fine, because OM and also G, they've left plenty of detritus for us to sift through, like Gillian McKeith used to do with poo before she went all anti-vaxxy and mad. I am John Holmes, and this week then, oh, an ill-conceived filler film about seabirds. What's your favourite ice cream flavour? And Hugh Jackman has an issue with his nose. Joining me to stone it all to death with words are, of course, Mark Haynes, and a third of the comedy threesome, The Trap, comedian, actor and writer, is Paul Litchfield. Paul Litchfield here. It's a big podcast, everybody. It's good to be back, isn't it? It's good to be back.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily good to happen to be watching The One Show again, but it's nice to be talking about it, John. You know, you can't knock that. I noticed on my iPlayer when I typed it in, it took until it got to the H in show before it offered up The One Show. So unsure that people would actually desperately want specifically to watch the One Show.
That's very strange that you mentioned that, Mark, because when I looked on BBC iPlayer, it actually tried to take me to the dark web.
at every turn, the iPlayer tries to throw you off the One Show scent. It would rather send you to paedophilia user groups.
It's not often as well. It kicked off, you know, when I clicked it on with an advert for a Celebrity MasterChef. And it's not often when you're watching a show do you think, oh, I wish I was watching Celebrity MasterChef.
No, Paul, the first question we must ask is, have you ever watched the One Show before?
Okay, well, look, first of all, thanks for having me on. It feels a bit like jury duty, and like someone's got to do it at some point, which I'm happy to do.
Everyone gets a turn.
Yeah, everyone gets their turn. I'm going to say, I have, obviously, yes, I know of it. I don't watch it, but I have a rather sort of Pavlovian response to when the theme comes on. As soon as that theme tune comes on, I immediately have to start doing something, which isn't normally prepping dinner or going out into the garden or self-harming. It's one of those. Because I cannot stick a slim tin shit of it. I mean, it's just the worst. It's a joy to talk about because the format is just so jarring, the way that they just leap twixt and fro from issues that you just go, what? And I understand that things like This Morning has the breadth of airtime to maybe sort of do that a bit better. But a 28-minute show that leaps sometimes from pubic lice to Sally Gunnell is just... It's just too much to cope with.
You think that's a great leap. That's one of their easy segues. That's
an easy one, isn't it? Yeah.
Should we start with the Tuesday? Was it the Tuesday or the Monday? I don't know. It blends into one. But it was done with Alex Jones and Ronan Keating, a man with all the charisma of Ronan Keating.
It's worth saying, you know, that we aren't doing live episodes. That we've sort of made this format even worse by having to not take fresh episodes of the One Show shit, but old sort of stinking piles of fetid One Show shit, because they're on holiday at the minute. They've decided to take the show off just as we decided to come back.
I'm quite looking forward to maybe when you both start ripping the shit at a teletext at some point.
it's the podcast waiting to happen. The idea that we had to go back and watch the final two broadcasts, though, before they went on their summer break was sort of fitting, because there was a... we could start with the very end, I suppose, because Alex Jones had a sort of... Because she's going off to have a baby, another baby, her third baby, as they kept saying. There was a sort of tribute to her, wasn't there? At the end of the last programme.
Which was
called One Big Thank You.
We've got a message here from Pauline Al.
Oh.
And she says, the trials and tribulations of the pandemic have been eased by Alex.
Oh.
Her infectious giggle and accent, getting more and more Welsh the more excited she gets, has kept our spirits up. She has no idea how good she is, that's true. She gives one big thank you to lots of folks, so let's give her one huge big thank you before she goes on maternity.
Oh, Pauline, stop it!
We were only too happy to oblige, so this is your one big thank you.
I feel like we've seen this exact scenario and package a number of times in the last year. So every time she has a baby, which is obviously twice, and this is the third, we've had exactly this package. I think there was a bit, obviously, when Matt Baker left, they did exactly the same. And it seems like the One Show is more keen on this package than it is on anything else that it does in the year.
It is the most consistent package they have, to be fair.
Yeah. I just thought this was something that they do at the end of every week, Alex, just to keep her on the contract. And
They had Ronan saying at the start, you know, you made us laugh, you've made us cry.
You deserve one big thank you, Al. You've been amazing this last year. You've been there for everybody across this country every evening, 7 p.m. on the One Show. You've made us laugh, you've made us cry.
I mean, that isn't true. You could lie about anything. If you're going to lie, just say you destroyed Tokyo in the 50s. you're made of gas. You go under.
Just say, you've made us watch. And then that's it. I loved the little tears in her eyes. She's like, oh, guys, that's so amazing. And I just really got the impression that she was completely in charge of that edit bit.
She
edited all of it.
My absolute favourite bit of it was the delineation between celebrities who were saying stuff and normal people. And the normal people had a strap underneath their sort of little bit as they were speaking, and that just identified them as the One Show viewer.
Thank you for all you've done for us, especially during the pandemic.
No name, not Doris84, Blackpool, no. You know, the one show viewer.
It was, I will correct you, Mark, it was Gethin Jones, your favourite, who introduced this sequence.
Yeah,
of course,
I think Ronan was the opening of the video. I think
that's true.
Where he said
was.
It,
yeah. I beg your pardon. You're absolutely right.
They were able to get him because he'd been sitting in as a presenter.
Day before.
Yeah.
The day before. So Gethin's done this a few times. I can only presume. Yes, he's Mark's favourite. Yes,
yeah.
He's like the sort of embodiment. You know, if you get out of a hot bath too quick, and you feel a bit. That's him.
He presents with all of the same sort of like rhythm and cadence. Of a nurse telling you, there's no need to panic, you've had a big stroke, but I'm here to look after you. Yeah. And this isn't a hospital, this is Gethin's dungeon.
It's like they tranquilised Stanley Unwin.
When
he introduced it, right, did I mishear this? I played it back a couple of times. Did Gethin introduce it and then... Before they rolled VT, I think Alex Jones said "fuck" under her breath.
What?
I'm fairly sure.
What?
No. Let's have a listen
You're
now.
Only too happy to oblige. So this is your one big thank you.
And again.
One big thank you.
I think she said "fuck." I'm fairly sure she did.
I think the important thing is, John. Let's not give her the benefit of the doubt. She needs to be fired.
she was probably just reading one of her tattoos. Let's not leap onto Gethin. We've got to deal with the Keating.
Yes.
I mean, we have got to deal with
Keating.
Let's deal with that. If we're going to hop about, then absolutely right. He was on the night before. And Keating is also now a regular stand-in presenter since the demise of Baker. Mm. Well, where should we start with him? I mean, should we start with... Well, let's start at the beginning of the show, because they think they've got a vague structure, so we might as well copy it. Guests were Ryan Reynolds, good guest, Michael Parkinson, and the films were The Perfect Seaside Ice Cream Scoop, Bird Watching on the Yorkshire Coast, which included a rare glimpse of a puffling, which Alex told us is a baby puffling.
Bird watching cool. Ollie and Adeem are off to the Yorkshire coast to try and catch a rare glimpse of a puffling.
Yes.
Which is a baby puffin.
Yeah, and Ronan started off before they went to the thing. When she said, they're looking for a puffling, Ronan said, yeah, they're not extinct.
And they're not extinct.
They're not extinct. All right, David Attenborough.
Yeah. And I thought what that hinted at was there were two things that were happening there is, one, Ronan had confused it with a dodo earlier in the day, and he was making a joke about that.
When they or said a pterodactyl.
Puffing, yeah.
I love the fact he said they're not extinct. No, because that's a baby of the species that gave birth to it, which is clearly alive.
But I also have the feeling that they must have had a big conversation where he's trying to convince people that baby puffins are extinct. The whole thing is just a big mess. what I was surprised about is they had obviously Parkinson in as the quite a long interview. Probably got more screen time than Ryan Reynolds.
In his panic room.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a panic room. Did you notice what he had in there? He genuinely had a kettle and mugs. It wasn't a sort of
plastic
office,
mugs.
Wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
And there was a copy behind him of a book, which was How to Eventually Become More Right-Wing for Dummies. He's clearly right.
And he had a great big, prominent poster of himself.
He did. I thought for a while it was Jimmy Tarbuck, and I was like, you know, strange sort of thing to be a fanboy of.
Which he just spits at.
What was funny is they sort of, you know, you remember Parkinson as being the greatest TV chat show of all time. And... Yeah. You suddenly realise that when they sort of go, let's have a little clip and see who it is, they have Ryan Reynolds and Parkinson there, and they do it to show that Ronan Keating was on. And you suddenly remember that Parkinson wasn't always vintage, was it? That he had to do a 20-minute chat with Ronan Keating when he was in his 20s.
Now, we had a root around. Ryan, you'll enjoy this as well. We had a root around in the BBC archives. Yeah. And what did we find, Ronan? Oh, a fresh-faced young thing on Parkinson telling us all about his ambitions for his career. Have a look and wait till the camera pulls out because the trousers are special.
Snakes in trousers.
They made a lot of the trousers, didn't they? They really liked the trousers.
They showed the entrance that Ronan made onto Parkinson because the one show has a thing of if it thinks the joke is good, it will always go back for a second bite. because nothing is funnier than the same joke done twice.
Yeah, look what you were wearing once, and then Alex Jones is laughing your head off going, aren't you embarrassed?
What are you all laughing at? what? No, not you, Ryan.
Yes,
not Ryan.
Ryan's enjoying that, you see. Yes, he is.
Wow.
Meanwhile, she's dressed like she's the owner of a sugar plantation in Atlanta in 1890.
Yes. She looked like she was wearing a sort of a wedding dress that a woman in her 80s would appear sort of wearing, and they'll
she
sort
looks
of go,
like
she was
about
jilted
to,
in the 20s.
Yeah, she's going to step off a sedan chair in the Mississippi and go, where's my bow? Very odd.
Yes, it was. The funny thing about Parkinson, of course, is when you're showing that Ronan Keating clip, you've got a genuine Hollywood A-lister and you've got Michael Parkinson, and television would now rather show you a presenter you've got no interest in wearing some trousers in the past. Missed opportunity.
They've got so
Michael
much
Parkinson.
Stock footage, haven't they? Like Muhammad Ali, and you know, they can
play. Well, I knew
so
he was
going
to drag. I knew he was going to drag.
Oh,
out. As soon
Connolly
as they said, you know,
well.
what were your highlights, Michael Parkinson? And you sort of go, right, here we go. He's going to say Billy Connolly,
as an example. Mm. I mean, when Billy appeared on Perth on the show, nobody had ever heard of him outside of Glasgow.
He won't say emu because he hated the emu thing.
Yeah,
so the one show will have wanted to play a clip of emu,
exactly.
But Michael Parkinson will have said no. You know already that's happening.
Yeah.
Also, behind Michael Parkinson, next to his kettle, was a dog bowl. And I like to think now that Parkinson laps his food from that.
I tell you, what was the surprise is I haven't seen Parkinson on TV for a few years. And because you are so used to seeing him, that when you see him a bit older, it comes as a genuine shock.
It did. Yeah. I did a bit of a double take.
Yeah, it's not his fault he's not on TV. You know,
it's not his fault that he's older.
It's not his fault that time happens. You know, no one is blaming Michael Parkinson for that.
So what are your favourite memories, Mike? Well, I seem to remember doing a line of K with Angela Lansbury in the green room. No, we're going to have to cut that.
Yeah. You can talk about that, but don't talk about emu. I hate emu.
Talk about bloody emu.
I did actually write down all of the questions that were asked to Michael Parkinson. What I do regard
him
as one of the great interviewers of all time.
What's your favourite ice cream?
Do you like lasagna?
The first question was, who was your favourite guest?
Who stands out as your favourite guest?
The second was, how did you get started?
How did you make, then, the move into television?
The third, did you ever get nervous? The fourth, how do you relax people on set?
What were your techniques to get them, well, to make them feel relaxed on set?
And the fifth and final one, what were the standout ones?
What were the standout ones, then?
Which is exactly the same as the first question.
Yeah.
Who was your favourite guest? Those are questions that school children would ask if they said, we've got someone coming in who is an old interviewer.
I'm just surprised they didn't say, have you ever worn snakeskin trousers, Michael? Make blow up.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, it's Mr. P here.
And the other Mr. P.
And we are the hosts
of Two Mr. P's in a Podcast.
The educational podcast where you don't actually learn a thing.
No, instead we explore the weird, wonderful and downright hilarious things that happen in school from people actually doing the job. We reminisce on our own time at school, funny things we experience each day, and of course we share your hilarious stories from the chalk face. So if you work in a school or just want a nostalgic trip down memory lane, sit up straight, fingers on lips, and get ready for the lesson.
Oh, what's also funny is when Ronan Keating's been on and they continually ask, who was your favourite guest? And he's like, well, everyone but him.
Yes, it wasn't that bastard.
Yeah, I found an interview with Michael Parkinson in 2010, which I found very interesting. He was talking about basically how his show didn't have a place on British television anymore. He said,
yeah.
The trouble with the talk show is everyone fancies their chances. Even those on the extreme fringes of the ever-expanding world of modern celebrity reckon it's a doddle. They're encouraged in their foolish ambition by television executives who really ought to know better than to entrust the job to people who, more often than not, neither know how to ask a question nor listen to the answer.
Wow.
That was 11 years ago.
That sounds like Noel Edmonds Ryder.
But it is that thing of having the great interviewer on, and you've got Alex and Ronan sort of just going, how did you relax people on set?
I used to fucking wank them.
To the women, I'd be sexist.
I will tell you this, I did a massive Tom Titty emu after that interview.
He obviously does face some allegations over the years of being a bit sexist and a bit sort of, patronising to some of his women guests. I loved the fact that he couldn't remember the name Lauren Bacall. And he wanted to mention it twice.
Oh, I know.
And each time he had to refer to her as Humphrey Bogart's wife.
Well, I mean, you can't get past Ali. You can't get past some of the great stars of Hollywood like James Cagney and people like that who I watched as a kid. The women that I loved and fell in love with, who I later got to meet and became friends, like Ingrid Bergman and Humphrey Bogart's wife, what was her name?
The best bit about it was he was saying, I became friends with a number of people who I interviewed, Ava Gardner, Humphrey Bogart's wife.
What was her name?
Good friend.
I used to go down to the roller disco with Billy Bragg.
No, you did not. The fact that he just didn't know her, it just didn't know the woman's name. I mean, just
and
awesome.
Then he went back to it. That was the best. Yeah. It was all he was thinking about was, look at the right tit, not knowing her name there. And that was all that was on his mind. So when he had to say
I'll have another run at it.
Legend, James Cagney. Humphrey Bogart's wife.
I've met so many people.
Hang on, Eartha Kitt. No, it wasn't Eartha
Kitt. I don't know why, but the only one I can remember now is that one. I can't even remember the boxer. Yeah. It's just the one who was the wife of the Humphrey the Bogart.
Yeah. The one who's in James Bond.
Absolutely magic.
And also, speaking of things Alex said that Poss probably didn't mean to. Did she say at the beginning of this Parkinson interview, when they were talking about regional accents, did she say you were a trainblazer?
So you were sort of a trainblazer at the time.
What's a trainblazer? Is that what you're wearing?
A credit to Parkinson, though, for just absolutely not wanting to be part of this modern bullshit story. That question being, were you a trailblazer or a trainblazer when it came to hearing regional accents on TV? And he was just like, I started off as a journalist, which is, he was really like, fuck your question. I have no interest in this ridiculous culture war. It was very, very good to see that steamroller.
One of his highlights that he kept talking about, of course, was Muhammad Ali. But then they played a clip of it, but it was the short, it was about 10 seconds.
A meaningless clip.
Nothing happened. Meaningless clip.
You've been voted sports personality of the world. Does that surprise you?
Yes, I do, because of the world. That's a big thing to be, number one man in the world.
Absolutely. A clip totally chosen at random.
Yeah, there are so many points throughout the two episodes I watch where they'll come back to either Alex or Gethin or Ronan Keating, and they just answer completely out of context. Like, they just haven't been listening to anything that's been said.
I noticed a new thing about Gethin.
It happens
that
so many
exactly
times.
That, Paul. It's exactly that.
You should have asked, is the bit where he's talking to Richard E. Grant, who's talking about being the old classic Loki.
Yeah.
And he says, well, I wish I had I wish I had some muscles like you, Gethin. That was a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, I thought for a start that I would be in that costume with your muscles. So I was very put out when I got there and I said, so where's the Gethin suit? And they said, no, you're just going to have Loki magic. And I said, no, I need Gethin muscles because I was born, as you can see, without him.
Yeah. And then he says, you know, I did ask them to put muscles in the suit. I mean, I did ask. And then the next thing that Gethin says is, well, you should have asked.
You've got to ask for it, you see. You've got to ask for these things if you want them.
And he goes, I did!
I did ask!
I noticed another interview where he repeated one of the lines they'd said just before they came out. And his big thing is he repeats what's going on as if he's listening and in part of a conversation. And it's just like, I can't even think. I was about to say it's like a trained monkey, but a monkey can't speak. So I don't know what it's like, but it's just, as soon as you notice it, you go, oh my, that's his technique to get through life, is you say the last thing you just heard. Last thing you just heard.
Or you're just idly thinking while they're talking and then you just connect that dot. Because there's a bit after, in the second episode, where Hugh Jackman has just finished plugging his bloody film or whatever. Mm. And they go, thank you very much. And then Alex goes, we will need it.
Thank you. We will need it.
What are you talking about? You'll need what? I don't understand what that meant. What they need in the studio is two men with fucking idiot boards with the word context written on it, and they just wobble them. Always have some context.
There was also some bits where Alex, especially, would review how they were doing, and she would always do it negatively. She'd sort of go, oh, yeah, very bad content. You know,
lot of shit.
this is fucking crap.
Fuck this.
Yeah, she also was talking about with Parkinson. You know, I studied you. I didn't learn anything from it though.
Lots of people like myself have watched lots of your interviews. You know, over the years, gone back through the archives to pick up some tips. It didn't work.
And then there's a laugh. And there is something a little bit about. This smacks of being a little bit of a race to the bottom by saying that, you know, this is all a load of shit. We think it's a load of shit. If the people making it think it's a load of shit, why don't we just stop it?
Because then we'd have nothing to do, Mark.
It's just amazing. You can have someone talking about something and then you could just respond with, we will need it.
We will need it.
I mean, I'm going to do it today when I go to Sainsbury's. Whatever they say to me, I go, we will need it. And just see what happens.
There was a moment when the curtain was pulled away in the Parkinson interview, of course, where you think, well, why is Parkinson on? Oh, OK, there's a documentary, Parkinson at 50. And then he said, well, you know, this documentary, done by my son, Mike, he's produced it. And you go, oh, here we go.
And I think that this documentary done by my son, Mike, he's produced it.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. My son, by the way, also called Michael.
Yeah, that's Michael Parkinson. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the young one. Here's a weird thing. You'd think if you were like Michael Parkinson and you wanted to call your child after you, you'd choose the first one, wouldn't you? Nope. This is the third son. It's like he ran out of names. He went, I like the name's Keith, I like the name Peter, I don't like any other names. It's got to be Michael from now on.
It's even a little Billy Connolly. So. Okay.
There was a good handbrake turn that was. Well, it wasn't even a handbrake turn. It was almost a proper television segue into Michael Parkinson, which went from the film about seabirds, which was shot in the northeast, which we'll talk about, where they went into Michael Parkinson saying, "Well, Michael, that was your neck of the woods, wasn't it?"
Now then, so Michael, that was your neck of the woods there in Yorkshire,
and that got us into Parkinson. But it came off this film. Where two presenters were on a clip. This was an odd thing.
Yeah.
It started off as a sort of classic wildlife one-show filler piece, but rapidly became two men. What happened was they went to see some birds. They went to see some puffins. They seemed
so
keen on birds.
Disinterested. And they had to force the, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nadine go bird watching for the very first time. And crucially, as you can tell by that piece, the very last time.
Yeah.
Because
but
everything's
in the middle
like,
of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, man. Wow.
Bro, that is so rare for us to see. They spend like the first 40 days underground.
Wow.
And they'll only come out when they're ready to leave, bro.
There was shots of puffins and gannets. I don't like them, they wet their nests. Right? And there was niche. They got very excited about albatri, didn't they?
They did.
But then in the middle of this, there were some shots of seabirds, and then a shot of them on a bench in Bridlington talking about ice cream.
Ice cream? Ice cream.
I think my first memory of a holiday by the sea would have been Bournemouth. I definitely remember the seagulls being...
Yeah.
I think that was probably the first time I realised how vicious they can be.
Yeah, love seagulls, man, love seagulls.
I know. I'm trying.
It was like they'd run out of bird films... And then they talked about ice cream, but later on we got a film all about ice cream, and I wondered whether that was deliberate, because that was also shot in the same region, same crew.
And if you want to stay really niche, then the ice cream flavour could have been albatross!
Albatross!
When they were saying albatross, I was like, please God, let one of them turn to the other one and just go, it's fucking albatross flavoured!
I mean, the report on ice cream was a thrill ride for me.
But first, come rain or shine, no British summer is complete without a Mr. Whippy.
But whether you love a classic cone or something more sophisticated, as these sellers show, when it comes to making the perfect ice cream, the one ingredient they all have in common is a massive scoop of passion.
An absolute thrill ride. They start off with some vox pops of people going, well, it has to be chocolate ice cream for me, or it's not ice cream.
It has to be something to do with chocolate, or I'm not liking it.
Someone else going, I just like vanilla. Yeah. And, you know, I like to throw strawberry mivvies at gypsies. It's just ridiculous. And then there's the obligatory, let's find the two most Shoreditch wankers we can find on the coast, and we find them.
I wanted an ice cream shop, and Ben wanted a bar. We're both quite happy to meet in the middle as well.
It's a good fusion.
Yeah.
We're very focused on the science behind what we do.
The reason we use liquid nitrogen is it's an incredibly cold component, and by using that, you get a really rapid freeze on your gelato or ice cream.
In the Bognor Regis Gelato Emporium.
Yes, and they are the cocktail equivalent, aren't they? Oh, I just hated every
this
slim
was the
second
company.
Of them.
They were called Brozen.
Of course they were.
Absolute worst. Two posh brothers, very much into the science of ice cream.
We do all sorts of flavours. You know, we do saffron, Lost Mitten and Toilet Duck. gin, lesbian and narwhal. Try our favourite, which is cumin, pessary and conspiracy theory. It's amazing. shut up, you bastards.
When one of them said saffron-flavoured gelato, I really thought a sister was going to come out of the way.
Hiya!
Yeah. that piece, the bit where they had all the people talking about what ice creams they like, the best bit is where it cut to like a stereotypical Nouvelle Vague Italian guy who just went, chocolate.
Dark chocolate.
Vaguely sexual.
For me, it was the speech highlight was the woman, Katie, she was called, and she worked in, you know, some ice cream emporium where they made Knickerbocker Glories, and she showed us how to make the perfect Knickerbocker Glory. But through her recipe, her voice went really weird and up at the end of every sentence. So she says, and then we had the coulis,
chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla. Top it off with some more coulis, whipped cream, a wafer disc, a maraschino cherry, and long-handled teaspoon. That's when you know it's an ice cream sundae.
And the ice cream! And it was like she'd got a sugar rush high at the end of every sentence she was speaking.
It's either that or the glass was too cold. Because she said it's not... I like the fact that she went, it's not an ice cream sundae unless you use a long spoon. You just got the
spoon?
If you didn't choose the long spoon option, you'd get slapped.
I liked the way she was making it. She was wearing one of those COVID face visors. And it made it look like she was worried that the sundae was going to explode. She looked like she was diffusing a Knickerbocker Glory.
Well, I don't know if you saw in the late 90s, Mark. I mean, Lady Diana did a lot of good work diffusing sundaes in the Middle East.
They had a little vox pop during this bit while she was making those. And the first woman said, I think British people just like ice cream. Don't ask me why.
I think British people just adore ice cream. Don't ask me why.
And the only reason she's come up with saying that is because she's literally been asked why the British people like ice cream.
Exactly.
And they've gone, that is good enough to put on TV. A woman who has basically said, I will not answer the question you've asked. Happy. Yeah. That's good.
There you go.
And then
I don't like vanilla ice cream because it's racist.
And the next person said, I just think it's a sweet delicacy.
I just think it's a sweet delicacy.
No shit. No shit. A delicacy. But the fact that this was on the same programme as Michael Parkinson, who talked about...
You'll find us in the delicacy aisle.
Michael Parkinson talked about learning journalism and how journalism is important in television and how he started off. And then they had to counter with that with a film that was just about what's your favourite flavour ice cream.
Oh, I know.
It's amazing. Every single piece they show you is things you already have heard of and know.
Yeah, completely. Yeah,
and they offer nothing else. Even the bit where poor old Ollie and Nadine had to look at birds. Clearly so disinterested. Like, oh, yeah, that's a brown albatross. It's got a wingspan of 4 metres.
Well, I did have a look into who they were. And it's quite interesting. So this actually started with the only handbrake turn of the two shows. So they said, now, stress levels soared during lockdown. And
oh
so
my
too
God.
Did bird watching.
Stress levels soared during lockdown. So too did bird watching, which is no surprise, really, given that a recent study...
Really? That was amazing.
Unrelated. So the guys are Ollie Alana Pekin and Nadine Pereira. Pekin by name, Pekin by nature. And they are sort of like trying to make bird watching cool. So they are two young men of colour. I looked them up. They are an organisation called Flock Together. And this is how they describe themselves. A bird gang devised by founders Ollie and Nadine to help combat the underrepresentation of black and other people of colour in nature. So, you know, good movement.
Yeah.
Nadine, 26-year-old youth...
Hang on, there are loads of black and people of colour in nature.
Yes,
you know,
I know.
Generally speaking.
I know.
I mean, you know, being human beings and all. I mean, you know.
Yes. I don't think that's their point, John.
In nature.
Have I missed the point again?
You may have missed the point again.
We've definitely not seen David Attenborough do a documentary about black people at any point.
He says, his little bio, he's loved nature from a very early age and has been a serious bird watcher for well over a decade. Fair enough. Ollie, 36-year-old creative director. He's the founder of award-winning creative agency Superimpose/Futureimpose. Ollie has helped a number of global brands stay relevant to younger audiences.
Ooh.
There is no mention of bird watching. So when you go back and watch it, you'll see Nadim is like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I've seen an albatross.
Albatross, albatross, albatross.
Albatross!
Let's have a look out there. I can see something floating with heavy black wings.
Yeah, that is the albatross.
The wave,
bro.
Yeah, can you see
that
it?
That is the albatross.
Wow.
We're looking at a good, like, 2.5-3 metre wingspan.
I've seen an albatross. And Ollie is very much like, where did you go on holiday when you were a kid?
Yeah. I've just seen the arcade and the pasty van. Can we go there?
Yes. Yeah.
That explains why they went to sit on a bench and have an ice cream and talk about seagulls, because that's the only bird that the other guy had never heard about.
You get to the point where you suddenly realise they can't do a very involved thing, because I think it would be slightly dishonest. Because one of them is not actually, seemingly, very au fait and up to date with bird watching. He is just a punter. And that isn't the sort of thing you want. You don't want punters. I don't know why Nadim isn't doing it by himself. But then I'm probably, you know, I'm not the creative director of the person who runs
it. Well, he needed
thing.
Someone to bounce off, didn't he, Mark? He needed someone to bounce off to make that piece fly.
I
was impressed that they did link the ice cream on the bench and then later had this film about ice cream. Oh, and by the way, in that film, the man who had been... What did they say? He was the longest-serving ice cream man in... Leeds.
Yeah, he basically won. He won some awards, and so unlike a lot of ice cream men, he wasn't just involved in turf wars or selling drugs.
But serving up to 500 perfect ice creams a day is only part of Ian's award-winning service.
He is always so kind, and I'm telling you, if the kids drop the ice cream in front of him, he will give them another one free of charge.
He's the most self-serving man in Leeds.
Yeah, but there was an interesting cutaway. He said, "Well, you know, we've been doing this for years. My parents did it. My father did it. My grandfather did it. And now I work in ice cream. And both my daughters work with us." And then they showed a picture of him with three daughters.
We've been in this park now for over 20 years. I've been born into the ice cream. My parents both sold ice cream. Both my daughters work with us.
And it was like, oh, hello.
I think,
well, we're not going to mention the third one, the black sheep. She fucking hates it. She loathes it.
I think, I'm not sure it was a daughter. I think it may have been the mum. And I think she is staying young on a diet of screwballs and mivvies. You know, she looks great. I loved some of the lines in this were properly funny. They were like from a sort of not very well-written comedy. But Ian Smith from Leeds believes the ice cream van isn't going anywhere.
Ian Smith from Leeds believes that the ice cream van isn't going anywhere.
Well, that defeats the fucking point of having one, doesn't it? He then told us how to make a 99, and it went like this. Single cone, ice cream, flake, push it halfway in, fantastic.
Single cone's the best. Fresh ice cream, flake, push it halfway in, fantastic.
Absolutely unbelievable. He also said the line, you know, because once ice cream gets in your blood, you can't get it out.
Once it gets in your blood, you can't get it out.
Well, it clots, doesn't it? It clots. And there we simply stop the podcast bus, because like the Taliban, we need to check what's on board before we can continue tomorrow with part two. Again, it's sort of like the Taliban, but rather than shoot Malala in the head, spoiler, she lived, she's fine now, we're just checking it for engaging one-show content. In the event that there isn't any, there won't be. We'll be back tomorrow for the second part of the return of the One Show Show.
Hello, I'm Tom, and I make a podcast where I log in to celebrities' Amazon accounts. It's called...
What a brilliant idea for a pod. There's no original pods out there anymore, but this genuinely is.
Oh, thanks, Ben Bailey-Smith. Anyway, it's called...
This is good, isn't it? It's clever, this podcast. You should do more.
Thanks, Kerry Godleyman. It's called...
This is such a great idea, by the way. What great podcast.
Shappy Corsander, you're too kind. The podcast is called...
It's biographical. You can get all sorts of information out of people. This is a very good idea.
Thank you, Nick Helm. It's called My Mate Bought a Toaster.
I'm going to listen to this podcast.
Thanks, Alex Horn. Can you tell your friends?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.